Arm's Length Reporting, for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in to KER Politics. This weekend's show is packed full of information and interesting topics because, boy, is the world falling apart. This is Jim McKinney, your co-host with Al Corlin. Today we have, for the first part of the show, we've got a successful fund advisor, a regular that's been on the show many times, Dan Placente, from the Bay Area, that place once beautiful and nice, which is now someplace you just got to be careful about. And we've got a lot of topics to talk about. And I'll tell you, Dan, welcome in. And I wanted to ask you, as a fund manager and I guess a frequent contributor to the Wall Street Journal, what do you think about the inflation numbers that just came out?
Well, small correction. I don't run any funds, but I do manage portfolios for people. There's a distinction there. But what question would you like? Say that again. What would you like me to respond to?
Inflation. The latest numbers on inflation.
Yeah, I don't think inflation's as fleeting as they think it's going to be. There's some significant problems that we have to face. There's some of the fleeting part will be because of the supply restrictions, and that will start to work its way out. But there's other bottlenecks that they're creating, and because they're adding more regulation to the system, and it's we're going to have problems going forward here. They put so much money into the system that's sloshing around, and they keep trying to help us with every little problem that we have. They're this nanny state that they're creating with all this money going around chasing fewer goods. You're going to have inflation. It's a monetary problem. So I think we're going to live with this for some time. But there is going to be corrections in here, and they're going to be painful for a lot of people. So I think people ought to be very cautious here in making big purchases and making investments. They ought to think long and hard about what they're doing and not think that this parade is going to continue forever.
You know, Danny, Jimmy, if I can just jump in here, I got to tell you, Dan, got a comment yesterday on our blog. By the way, both Jimmy and I really appreciate the comments that we're getting on the blog. But I believe it was B. B said, the inflation is kind of interesting, and because of what's happening, I would strongly suggest, I being B, the people stay away from real estate right now, because I think that you're going to find, because of the economic difficulties ahead of us, that probably real estate values, whether it's single family dwellings, whether it's raw land, what have you, are going to decrease. I think that's a possibility, but I'm not really sure that's a totally viable possibility. Dan, what do you think?
Well, the variable is what will interest rates do. Right. Most people, a lot of people are payment shoppers. They'll buy as much real estate as they can afford the payments on. And so if rates rise, that changes the calculation for a lot of people. And so we'll just have to see. I mean, when you have rampant inflation, if somebody tries to counteract that by raising rates, I mean, obviously the Fed's kept the punch bowl out there for as long as it can and will continue to do that. But at some point, if the problem becomes too great, and they have to raise rates, or rates rise on their own, it's going to be difficult for a lot of these. But so I'll give you an example, just anecdotal. I'm looking to buy a property, a second home in a place, and I've just watched people just pay crazy prices for things that sold for much, much lower, sometimes 50% lower, 60% lower in the previous year. And at some point, your common sense has to take over and say, you know what, I'm not participating in this. And I think you're starting to see people do that. They're starting to say, you know what, I'm just not going to play that game. I'm going to wait till things cool down, until there's cooler heads, and I'm going to make a decision when it's more rational. And I think you're starting to see softening in certain parts of the country. And I think that's good, because if it continues on like this, you have blow-offs like we had in 2007, 8, and 9. And I'm seeing people that are just now, in some markets, getting their money out from when they bought in 2005 or 6 prior to the crash. And I don't want to be one of those people. So if you don't want to be one of those people, you ought to think long and hard about making a purchase right now.
I agree, Dan. And the interesting part about it is there's this demographic shift from urban areas. There's a large number, we live up here in a beautiful little corner of the Pacific Northwest. People are inundating our local market along the coastline from Seattle, the greater Seattle area, Portland, and California. So the demand here is high, and what you're talking about with these, 50% increases, 30 to 50% increases in really just a year or two, is prevalent. Though it seems like people are going to continue to be moving out of those areas, and especially into areas like South Carolina, Florida, Texas, red states, you see this massive movement. We were out looking around in Lake Murray in South Carolina a few weeks ago, and people were coming in from Jersey and New York without seeing homes, paying 30, 40, 50% higher than people were asking for them, paying cash, getting out of those markets because of the taxes, because of the crime issues, because of basically their views. And you see this massive, I think this shift is going to really have an impact on our economy that nobody is really predicting or can see. There's going to be a lot of changes, especially with what's happening with the administration, with these mandatory vaccination requirements for large companies. What's going to happen with the workforce when we've already got these pressures on supply, when we've got, shortages of actual labor in some of these positions, and then you throw these types of issues on there, it's going to be very complex. These are waters we've never seen before. We've never been in this area before.
Yeah, and you put on top of that, you overlay the fact that people can work remote in a lot of jobs now. They just don't need the cities like they once did. I worked for 30 years in San Francisco, and then we finally decided, you know what, we're going to get out of this city, and we're going to go and work somewhere in the suburbs or the exurbs. And we just made that decision. And frankly, I've been out of the city for a year and a half now. I have not been back. I live 15 minutes or 10 minutes from San Francisco. I have not gone into that city except to use their airport. So, and you can do that now. You don't need to go and put up with the crazy people on the street and the crime and all the other ridiculousness, the expense. There was this local city tax. There's all kinds of other things that you have to put up with in a city. You just don't have to do that anymore. I feel sorry in a way for these outer areas, the exurbs and the suburbs, because they're going to be inundated with people from the cities who are going to start to demand city-type services and are going to bring some of the same garbage that they created in the cities into these areas. And it's going to be much more expensive. But, change is the way our world works. We're always in flux. That's just the way it is.
Well, that is the way it is. There's no question about that. Jimmy, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say we're getting close here to the end of this segment. And I just, I think we ought to transition to some of the decisions that are being made by the by this administration right now, and what the heck is going on, and how that's going to impact, not only the world situation, but certainly local economics as well as politics, and what may happen as we go forward with a lot of pressures on different, let's just say it, this kind of a political attack on conservatives right now by the administration and people that really don't want a larger government in place. So I think we ought to roll into that for the next segment of the show, if you're willing to do that, Dan.
Absolutely.
Well, I got to tell you, the next show segment is going to start here in about 15 seconds right after a commercial break, but I got to tell you, it is... It's a segment we're going to talk about mandatory inoculation, et cetera, and I have to tell you, I don't think you're going to be surprised at what both Dan and Jim have to say about that. Jim has an incredibly common sense view on that, and it's something that you just simply cannot disagree with. You guys, it's always fun putting this show together now that I have a co-host. That's going to take some of the pressure off of me. I want to tell you, I thoroughly enjoy doing this. Be right back with Dan Pacini.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Time for the second segment of KER Politics. Jimmy and I have Dan Pacini on the line with us right now. You know, I'm curious as to how you feel, Dan, about the mandatory inoculations that Biden is trying to push through. I think it's a crock, personally. I think it's just simply one more aspect of government control that we simply don't need, because those actions are totally stating, in my opinion, that Americans are imbeciles. They won't do the right thing. What do you think about that, Dan?
Well, I think it's even worse than that. We have a lawless president. I mean, we have to say it. The federal government doesn't own that authority. That's something that's reserved to the states and to the people. And he is acting in a lawless fashion, much like he did with the eviction ban. He just, you know, they just make this up, or DACA, like Obama. They just make these things up, you know. They bypass the legislature when it's a legislative issue. They bypass the states and the people when it's not even a federal issue. He has no authority to do such a thing, and he knows it. But they do it anyway because they know they can get away with it for a period of time until the courts catch up to them. And the courts don't do anything to them. They don't slap anything on them. So, you know, people ought to be nervous. We have a befuddled president. We have a guy who goes in and out of lucidity. He's, you know, he makes bad decisions. He's been incompetent for most of his career. He's just a, you know, a mediocre person. We got twin mediocrities, the president and the vice president. Americans didn't choose well. They just didn't, and they have to face up to it. This is what you're going to get. But this is lawless. So there needs to be pushback, and the states are starting to do that. You're going to see a number of lawsuits, and they're not just going to come from the states. To tell people what medicines you can put in your body, I mean, listen, I'm a vaccinated person. I read all the information I could read, and I made a judgment. And some of it's a hunch. I'm not a virologist. I'm not a scientist. I made a judgment. But I don't begrudge anybody else for making a different judgment. You're putting a medicine in your body. You ought to think long and hard about that. It's a new one. It's a new treatment. So, that's the biggest problem, is it's lawless. And we ought to fight for our Constitution. We ought to fight at every moment for that Constitution, because without it, we have no protections. That's the one benefit we have over many other countries, is we have a Constitution that was strong. So I don't know how else to put it. This is lawless.
You know, I think what bothers me more than anything else, when you see the Biden regime, I don't even call it the administration, the Biden regime, putting out these edicts, that like tyrannical decrees, basically forcing people to take actions, pushing vaccinations when you hear very little about natural immunities from people that have already had the virus. My family all had the virus. And of course, there's a number of studies out there that show that's actually more effective than the vaccines if you haven't had the virus yet. So you've got that, and they're not talking about treatments. They're not taking the same push, not pushing research and efforts on treatments that are effective and available out there if you do get the disease. And of course, the numbers, the deaths are significantly lower. We do have these cases, but we really can't identify the accuracy or the efficiency based on most of the information that's out there. You just aren't sure exactly what's happening with the PCR testing being recalled by the FDA. There's all kinds of questions out there. And to make a decision very rapidly without long-term studies if you want to take a vaccination and you should, you know, especially if you're in the right age category, I think that's a wise thing for you to do. If you are younger and it's very low risk for you, you don't know what's going to happen in the long term. And to make these decisions, you're impacting individuals' choices, their lives, but you're also putting these edicts on corporations and federal employees in order to force a political agenda that may be driven more by lobbyists from pharmaceutical companies than possibly by the science out there. And we definitely know that there's some questions about some of the science and some of the efforts by the NIH and, of course, the CDC right now. There's a lot of questions. They're backing off on a lot of issues. So you really have to question what the heck is going on with this government. And I agree with you completely. We have to stand up for those basic rights of choice. Without that, we have nothing. And we are like really not even a banana republic. We're in a dictatorial Soviet-style state where people are dictating our future and control. And I just don't think Americans can put up with this much longer.
I would say this. I think you've laid the groundwork to describe what this really is. These are political decisions. They keep talking about the science and we follow the science. They don't do anything of the sort. They do what's in their interest and what they want to do. They want to control people. They want a government that tells people what to do. They want to call the shots. They pick and choose the science that they want to follow. This isn't science. My read of this, again, not a scientist, not a person that has great expertise in this, but I think we're just delaying the inevitable. These viruses are going to pass through our culture and through our civilization. They're just going to pass through. They're going to take as many people as they're going to take, and they're going to sicken as many people as they're going to sicken. And we're just delaying the inevitable with the little lockdowns and our little theater masks that we wear that do almost nothing. It's going to pass through our culture, and we have to figure out a way to endure it. So you're absolutely right. We need to learn how to treat these things. We need to describe to people across the country what the best standard of care is for treating people like that. You ought to take basic precautions. You know, I take the zinc and the vitamin D and the vitamin C, and I do all that, and I try and take good care of myself and not put on weight. And you should do that in every facet of your life. You shouldn't smoke. You shouldn't do all these things. But the things that they're asking you to do are lawless, and we get back to that, and they aren't based on science. So I think it ought to be the other way around. You shouldn't protect all the vaccinated people like they're the most virtuous. You ought to say to people, listen, you're going to go out into society and you're going to encounter some people that are vaccinated, some people that aren't, some people that are carrying it who may or may not be vaccinated, and some people who aren't, and you make a decision what you want to do. So I tend to not linger in crowds. I tend to not get into people's spaces very long. I just make decisions like that, but I still live my life because you only have so much time on this planet, and you can't waste it, and you got to provide for your families, and you got to do other things. You have responsibilities. So it should be incumbent on everybody else to just make good judgments and see what happens. But if they want to really do the right thing by science, we ought to start with protecting the people that are most at risk, and those are the people that are obese, people with diabetes, people that are elderly. They're the high risk factor. Short of that, you're starting to see flu numbers. That's really what, those are the casualties. It's around the flu numbers for everybody else. So that's where I am on that.
My take on the Biden administration right now with this federal mandate that every federal entity has to do it, that they know the conservatives are less likely to take it. They're more concerned about the policies. I think they want to purge people that don't support their agendas. And I think that's a disgusting, absolutely disgusting agenda.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Welcome in, time for the second hour of KER Politics. I got to tell you, talking with Jim McKinney right now. Jimmy, I got to tell you, Dan is one of the most sensible guys who I know when it comes to political issues. You're right in that same category also. Both of you have a view on the basic COVID medications, COVID insurances, whatever you want to call them, that make all the sense in the world to me. I think we've talked COVID into the ground. We've talked immunization into the ground. Tell you what I'd like to talk about right now. Let's do a bit of a recap on the week, and I'm going to let you start any place you want, okay?
Yeah, sure. This has been an incredibly challenging week for the current regime in power in the United States. they have attempted to shift the focus away from a very just unfortunate and disastrous evacuation of Afghanistan, where they basically just left, ran away, leaving American citizens, after promising to get American citizens out, leaving American citizens on the ground with the Taliban, and basically went away with our tail between the legs. That was the beginning of the week, as you know, we closed out. The Biden administration and the Harris, Biden-Harris team, their poll numbers are dropping with Democrats as well. And then you've got these push to for mandatory vaccines. You've got economic stress. You've got bad job numbers from last week. Incredible rise in inflation, the largest jump in inflation that we've ever seen. These are all leading to some very interesting questions and a lot of concerns by American citizens out there of what the heck is happening. And again, as Dan had mentioned in the previous part of the show, you wonder about lawlessness and how far this administration is willing to go, how far they're willing to push against legislation, against individual privacy and rights. And it's been a very dramatic week, and a lot of intense reactions out there, and I think a lot of fear from the American people as well as the international community that really can't trust America to stand up under this administration, under this regime, if you will.
You know, I got to tell you, man, there's no question about that whatsoever. It's just amazing to me. I would like to elaborate a little bit personally on Afghanistan. I find it to be interesting that Angela Merkel and other European leaders have criticized the method that the United States used for simply pulling stakes up in there. I kind of am a little bit confused on that one. How do you feel?
So I think the NATO partners that have been in Afghanistan with the United States since the 9/11 attacks, and this is important, something that we need to talk about as well, is, you know, tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and Flight 93 crashing in Pennsylvania. Our allies, our NATO allies, have been fighting with us throughout. And the reality with NATO is NATO depends on U.S. logistics capability for movement of troops, for equipment, and really for policy, for direction and policy. And what the Biden regime accomplished over the last few months was to completely alienate our key allies in NATO and then left them stranded in a rapid pullout as the Taliban advanced and the Americans did nothing to stop it. And the reality here is becoming clear. NATO is incapable of operating without U.S. military support and forces. They could not bring to bear any pressure on the Taliban without U.S. air power and U.S. logistics. And of course, that made it very difficult for them to evacuate their own citizens. They're German citizens. There are British citizens. There are Canadian citizens. There's Italian citizens. There's Italian, there's people all over Afghanistan that were left behind because of the U.S. rapid pullout and their failure to understand, you know, what the ramifications for very poor planning, if not, and this is what bothers me more than anything else. It is so disastrous. It was so done so poorly that it almost looks like that they had to be actively planning to do it this way in order to allow the Taliban to move forward. And that bothers me very much right now. So, yes, our NATO allies are very concerned, as they should be, as should the world, with stability and Western civilization and how we will manage with a growing China power and complete lawlessness throughout the region in Central Asia right now with a terrorist regime, basically, that we not only emboldened but armed and allowed complete takeover of a country we spent 20 years and $2 trillion in supporting. So, yeah, it's disastrous. It's disastrous. Our allies are very concerned.
Yeah, I agree 100%. One thing I want to get into in the next segment that we're going to do, I want to talk a little bit about what the Republicans plan to do in the next election And the fact that you were given the honorary title of most active Republican in the county, in the Republican Party, I'd like you to talk about that a little bit. But I got to tell you, Jim, I am not a psychologist, but I have a very good read of my fellow human beings. And I would like to know, I don't understand at all why the Democrats, I mean, I have nothing against the Democratic Party of previous years. And I want to stress of previous years, but the Democratic Party in office right now, in my opinion, is simply not the party to get the job done for America. Why in God's name, Jimmy, are they doing what they're doing, in your opinion?
My opinion is, and this is, you know, my view and analysis, that the Democratic Party has had a civil war going on for a while now between the extremists, the leftist progressives, the AOCs, actually Nancy Pelosi is one of them too, but she, you know, shields herself in more a moderate role today. But the Maxine Waters and Nancy Pelosi's are pretty, they've always been extreme. They now have control. They believe that since they have control, they should push it as far as they can for the political purposes. And what's driving motivation on the left is the very loud, vocal, small minority of extremist partisan, actually partisan, I want to say, you know, Marxist ideologues. They're pushing the agenda on the Democratic Party, and the moderates are sitting back going, I'm not sure what to do, but I don't want to lose my position within the power, because they follow each other blindly. And the other thing that supports them is a corporate media right now that is very much in bed with the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Well, I think it all boils down to money. We've talked about this before. Globalism is, in theory, is a really good thing. It's hurting the United States right now economically, however, and I think it's hurting the United States from a security standpoint right now. But I have to say, I'm a pretty, you know, pretty much of a card-carrying, non-secular individual. And I think it's really, really interesting how people who are globalists are probably using that to an extreme against our country. You simply cannot do that, in my humble opinion. And my opinion ain't so humble, you guys. My opinion is pretty important because I'm pretty well informed. There's no question about that. You know, it's amazing to me how people with absolutely no credentials when it comes to government administration, et cetera, can get into the high offices that they have gotten into. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have term limits. I'm talking about individuals who are simply not qualified to hold the offices they hold. Be right back. Hey, welcome in here to wrap up KER Politics. Got Jim McKinney and myself, Big Al. Want to talk a little bit about some of the wonderfully interesting press that Dr. Fauci, Tony Fauci, is getting. Jimmy, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, sure. There's some interesting lack of press on one hand from a number of emails and information that was taken by The Intercept from through FOIA, Freedom of Information Requests. It identifies that Dr. Anthony Fauci and the his National Infectious Agency for or National Agency for Infectious Disease funded gain of function research in the Wuhan lab in China to the tune of hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now this contradicts completely his testimony to Senator Rand Paul just recently in front of Congress, in front of the Senate. What is interesting about it is The Intercept, it appears, was attempting to validate Fauci's statements that they did not fund gain-of-function research. But when they got over 900 records through the FOIA request, they found out that, in fact, he had funded gain-of-function research. And the sad thing is that the White House and Press Secretary Jen Psaki has actually doubled down and said, oh, he didn't actually mean that research. It was other research. However, he's going to face, if the public and the Department of Justice will follow through with any legal action, contempt of Congress and potentially a five-year fine. Now, here's the interesting part about it. The Intercept's a leftist progressive paper, you know, information outlet. They published it because, wow, this was a shock. But very few other mainstream media press outlets have picked up the story. ABC, NBC, CBS, none of them ran with it. CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, and Washington Post have been quite silent about it. And it really goes to the credibility of Dr. Fauci. It goes to the most important thing that has impacted this planet over the last few years, and that is the coronavirus, the COVID-19 virus, and what happened in the Wuhan lab and what was going on with U.S. government funding that potentially was involved in taking the kinds of risks that that have led to absolute tragedy around the world and literally millions of people dying.
So there is a possibility that Fauci may have had something to do with it through his funding, which is just, I mean, that would be the wrong place at the wrong time. Particularly right now, there's no question about it, because I think, in fact, my opinion is, if that turned out to be the case, I think that Trump would have to say, I knew about it, and that's why I limited the guy. And if he didn't say that, I don't know. I don't think it would look very good for him. What do you think about
that? Well, I think happened here was this thing, you know, spun out of control very rapidly.
Right.
And there was a huge effort by Peter Daszak from University of North Carolina, or actually from EcoHealth Alliance, the people that were that Fauci's organization funded to do the research, that they were cut out. Now, the reason why they were funding that company was because Congress and the federal government under the Obama administration had outlawed that type of research. So they had a cutout to continue it. And then Anthony Fauci was continuing to argue that gain-of-function research was very important to protect against major, you know, pandemics. Well, apparently, and this we don't know for sure at this point, but this coronavirus more than likely escaped from the lab that was doing gain-of-function research. The gain-of-function research, some of which was funded by Anthony Fauci, was it directly involved with the COVID-19 variant? We don't know. That's not a fact. But what is a fact is he, in congressional testimony, said that he was not funding any gain-of-function research. And that is a lie. And that is actually now a proven lie, and nobody is picking up in the media, which is showing you how corrupt our system is, that people are willing to actually ignore factual information, documents from his organization, from the National Institute of Health, from the CDC, that prove he lied to Congress, and they're willing to ignore that in order to cover up whatever is going on right now with this global issue. And it, to me, it stinks to high heaven. And somebody we have got to stand up, especially as this administration, the Biden regime, continues to push vaccinations that support massive pharmaceutical industries and investments that are not at all taking into consideration natural immunities from people that have already been infected with it, or spending the effort and the time for treatments that are available and reduce the risks. And this, you know, pushing the vaccine and threatening people is absolutely devastating, especially given the facts that, in fact, this may have started throughout the Anthony Fauci's funded research and this entire institution of corruption with pharmaceutical companies.
Well, the only comment I can make is that COVID is going to have a major, major role in the historical events that happened during this particular time. Anything else you want to talk about, Jimmy, when it comes to that includes the media?
Yeah, you know, what's happening right now is a clear sign that there are agendas, political agendas,
yep.
Not policy agendas, but political agendas that are driving media commentators, people that are, you know, on a progressive side that are actually trying to defend and support this administration as they absolutely clamp down on civil liberties. I just saw a clip from Dr. Lena Wynne, former head of the Planned Parenthood, on CNN, saying that people do not have the right, as far as she knows, to travel freely, that's a privilege, and that not being vaccinated should restrict you from being able to travel. Yeah, you cannot be vaccinated, but no, you can't travel via air or train or public transportation. And you know, this is getting to the point where people are getting absolutely angry. There's still 80 million people in the United States that are not vaccinated. I don't know how they're going to stop 80 million people from traveling, or how they're going to fine major corporations with over 100 employees. This $14,000 per event is what I guess the charge would be if you don't have your employees vaccinated. And then, of course, mandating all federal employees be vaccinated, which is really an attempt, in my view, to purge people that don't believe and don't support this administration's absolutely draconian policy. This is no longer democracy. This is tyranny. This is an edict from a dictator that is telling people how to operate and what they're going to do and what they can do with their lives. And somebody is going to stand up and say it, stop, and say stop, and they're going to have to do it pretty quickly, because we're going to be like the Soviet Union pretty soon if we continue down this road of kind of this Marxist ideology with tyranny and tyrannical control.
You know, Jim, we got about 2 minutes left here, actually a little bit less than 2 minutes to wrap up the show. And I guess what I want to say, and if you can give me a one-minute wrap on what I have to say, I'd appreciate it. The question is, who is the dictator? It sure as hell isn't Biden.
No, you're right. It's not Joe Biden. I'd say Ron Klein, the chief of staff. I would say one of the big players behind the scenes is Susan Rice. She's the political advisor for the Biden administration. She's
yep.
making these calls. I think they're ignorant. I think she's lied to the public before. They're willing to push whatever they want, and they're willing to go against the Constitution, as we talked about in the first segment with Mr. Pacente. This is unbelievable how far they're willing to go without retribution from the voters, and people will push back. So they either think they have control of the voting system, or they are absolutely ignorant because people are tired of this. Even moderate Democrats, even extremists are saying, wait a second, what the heck, man? This is getting a little out of control.
Yeah, it is getting way out of control. The fact of the matter is, we cannot go against the Constitution. That is, the Constitution is the highest law in the land, and we cannot go against the Constitution. I would not ever want that to happen. What an interesting, interesting, very, very dynamic time we are all in. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed the show. Jim and I enjoyed putting it together. Thanks, Jim.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.